Hello, movie friends. I'm Lily Percy, and I'll be your guide this week as I talk to the Academy Award-winning composer Gustavo Santaolalla about the movie that changed his life, Wings of Desire. If you've seen the movie, you'll soon hear and understand the connections between the movie and Gustavo's own work. But if you haven't, don't worry, we'll provide all the details you need. What if angels really did live and walk amongst us? What if they were involved in our everyday lives? They listen to us, they comfort us, they even put their hands on our shoulders in times of trouble, but they don't actually show themselves to us. One of my film writing heroes is Roger Ebert, and I love the way he describes the German film Wings of Desire. He said the angels in Wings of Desire are not merely guardian angels placed on earth to look after human beings. They are a reflection of the solitude of God, who created everything and then had no one to witness what he had done. The role of the angels is to see. We see a few angels all throughout Berlin in Wings of Desire, but the principal one is Damiel. He's an angel who has spent all of his life watching humanity and loves humanity. He loves every single mundane detail that makes us human beings. And as he's watching the various characters through the city of Berlin, Damiel realizes that he is no longer satisfied with just watching. He wants to experience what human beings experience. He wants to know what heartbreak is, what love is truly in a physical body. And he decides to fall to earth and become a human man.
How long?
Minutes. Hours, days, weeks, months, time.
Let me give you a few dollars just to tide you over.
Hey, wait! You wanted to tell me more. I want to know everything.
That you have to find out yourself. That's the fun of it.
Wings of Desire is incredibly poetic. In many ways, the movie is a metaphor upon a metaphor upon a metaphor. And it's no surprise to me when I think about the movie that it influenced composer Gustavo Santaolalla so much. Gustavo found himself, when he saw the movie in the mid-80s, asking himself questions about his own mortality, about his own faith, about angels. But he also found himself deeply influenced by the silence and poetry of the movie. And that's clear in the music he composes. Music for movies like The Motorcycle Diaries, Brokeback Mountain, and Babel. I spoke with Gustavo at a Live This Movie Changed Me interview in Winter Park, Florida. I just want to start kind of at the beginning of your life with movies. And I just wonder, you know, as a little kid growing up in Argentina, yes. What role did movies play in your life?
Movies, I was always very attracted to the visual world since I was a kid. And I started making records at a very early age. I started when I was 16 years old. I signed my first recording contract with RCA. So I was going to high school, but I was also, you know, I was making records. And when I finished high school, I wanted to study cinema. But I thought, well, I have my band already, so I have this music thing going on. Now I'm going to study cinema.
Yeah.
My parents weren't that crazy about it. My parents always were very supportive with the music.
Well, you're already a musician. They're like, we have to deal with that.
Correct.
Now we have to deal with
that. But they never thought that I was going to devote my life. I was a very good student.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think, you know, they had other thoughts for me, although, you know, they understood and it was fine. But one thing that was always told me was that my music was very visual. I always had this comment about my own music and the music that I produced, the records that I produced.
Yes.
And in truth, I mean, I kind of see music in a visual way. I approach music in a visual way. So somehow, you know, it was natural my going into making music for movies, to have, approaching that part, you know, which wasn't something thought, you know, or like in a strategy, a career strategy or anything.
Yeah.
It really happened in a very organic way, which is mostly how my career has developed and my life so far.
Yeah. So there's a question that I've been asking kind of every time that I do this interview, and it's to take you back to the first time that you saw Wings of Desire. Mm-hmm. Think about where you were, how old you were, all the feelings, and I'll just interrupt you again in 10 seconds.
Okay.
All right. So what memories came up for you right then?
Well, I saw the movie in Argentina, although I was living already in the United States.
Yeah.
And it really touched me, I mean, in a very powerful way. It connect with many things that had to do with my life and with things or paradigms that I had since I was a kid and that somehow, you know, I still have, you know, and which, you know, we can go into.
Please do.
So I was raised Catholic.
Mm-hmm. You know, you wanted to be a priest at a certain point
exactly.
in your life. Yeah.
And I was really into, the church actually was like two blocks from my house, you know, La Parroquia de la Sagrada Familia. But, you know, by the time I was 10, so between 10 and 11, I think I really went into a crisis, you know. And so I went to the priest in my church and I came with all these questions, you know, and said, and if God is almighty and all-powerful and all-kind, why does the devil exist? Why does, you know, hell and the devil exist? Mm. And if God, being almighty and all-powerful, allows that the devil exist, could it be that the devil actually works for God? That the devil actually is in God's payroll?
He's in on it.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
I didn't put it in those words, but the concept was, you know,
I can
perhaps
see why the priest
devil
was very
works
mad.
For God. Yeah. And that didn't.
No.
It wasn't. So they called my parents, and, you know, they was even talked about, you know, doing some, I don't know, exercise or something, you know, doing some praying and stuff. And my dad, that was an unbelievable man, he told me, listen, you know, this, you have to feel this. If you don't feel this, you know, you shouldn't do it. And the subject was never brought back again in my house. You know, they continue going to church, and I just took another road, still of spiritual search, you know, but just another road. And remember, there's a few phrases that the angel, you know, sort of things, you know, and there's this talk about, you know, when kids were kids, you know, when children were children, you know, when, which is something
it's repeated
also
throughout
repeated
the movie.
Throughout, and which is something also very important for me, which is the concept of childhood and the concept of innocence, which I try to bring also to the music that I do, something that I find very precious and something that we also always, as adults and as we grow up, we're always in the danger of losing it.
Yeah.
Because we become more experienced, or, you know, we become more knowledgeable, you know. Not really for me, you know.
Yeah.
So one of the things that I always think about it in my growing is that I'd like to not to think that every phase in my life, I leave phases behind. You know, there's a lot in my country that said, oh, ya superé eso, you know, I'm over that, you know, I now am in another phase. I always thought that it was better to try to keep on adding to your life. So let's say, you know, you have the child, and then you have, you know, the teenager. And then you have the young man. But, you know, you carry this. People,
you carry the child and the teenager with you. Yeah.
With you. And hopefully I still am, you know, that kid, that teenager, that young man, that man, you know. And obviously it takes work to keep that alive and fresh, you know. But I believe also very much in the fruits of inexperience. You know, fruits of inexperience will lead you to places that experience will never lead you, you know. So the inexperience is, for me, associated also with innocence, with a level of innocence. And the fact that in the movie, they're always going back to, you know, remark that thing about, you know, when child was child, you know, and will think all these questions about, you know, I mean, am I me or why me is not you? You know, I mean, these things that these questions that he poses, you know, with himself, or is this under the sun all an illusion? all these things that actually are questions that I still pose to myself.
Yeah.
Als das Kind Kind war, war das die Zeit der folgenden Fragen. Warum bin ich ich und warum nicht du? Warum bin ich hier und warum nicht dort? Wann begann die Zeit und wo endet der Raum? Ist das Leben unter der Sonne nicht bloß ein Traum?
Yeah, when I first heard that you wanted to talk about this movie, I was not surprised at all, considering your work in music, which we will talk about. But I did also wonder if you saw parallels. You know, the film is set in the 80s in divided Berlin.
Yes, of course.
And I wonder if you saw parallels even to Argentina during the Dirty War. I mean, this tension that was going on in Argentina at the time that you were living there. And then I also wondered about being Catholic, what angels represent to you. Because angels were, at least for me, growing up Colombian,
yes,
always around you. The idea of, you know, your guardian angel was a very
correct
real thing.
Well, it's a concept, an idea, and for me, a reality, the existence of, and once again, we can call it whatever you want to call it, but angel is a good name.
Yeah.
But that there's certainly energies that somehow protect us, and that somehow each one of us have particular energies that take care of us. We know now, and that's one of the fascinating things about what is happening now with science, is connecting finally to the world of spirituality, you know, and how they're coming very, very, very close, extremely close, as it always, I thought, should be, you know. And it, so we know that there are, you know, parallel universes. Mm-hmm. It's in that realm that I feel the existence of angels.
Yeah.
Yes. And obviously when you're in situations like the ones we lived in Argentina, or in lots of situations of danger, you're afraid to go on the street, or, you know, or it was very tough living in Argentina, and that resulted in 30,000 people disappear at the hands of the government, and that's one of the main reasons why I had to leave Argentina in 1978. So, yes, I mean, you know, in many circumstances in Argentina, I think there was a few angels that took care of me and of a lot of people, you know.
I can't see you, but I know you're here. I feel it. You've been hanging around since I got here. I wish I could see your face. Just look into your eyes and tell you how good it is to be here.
It's one of the beautiful things that the movie shows us is the idea of angels not intervening, but supporting.
Correct.
And then just being there. I mean, you see, one of my favorite scenes in the movie is this library scene where, I don't know if you remember, Gustavo, but it's this beautiful sequence. And it's one of the few times that music actually comes in into a scene in the movie. The movie doesn't use music that often.
Not that much, but it's very well used.
But it's very well used in that scene. And it's a scene where you see all these angels kind of walking next to people in the library listening to them and being next to them. It's a beautiful scene.
It's so poetic, the movie, too, you know, the concept of the angels just, you know, getting closer with their ears to listen what the people are thinking.
Yes.
It's beautiful, beautiful.
But I think about that scene and I think about it in relation to what you do with your own music in film. And I wonder if maybe even unconsciously watching that movie, you know, in the 80s affected the way that you started to compose for movies, because one of the things that I love about your work in movies is that you don't overuse music. In fact, you pride yourself on being very specific about how you use music.
Yes.
And there was actually a way that you said, you've described your work in movies as minimalist, heartfelt, and full of space and air.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wonder, can you talk a little bit about that, especially space and air? What does that mean?
Well, one of the things that is amazing is that, you know, that now, just reading, I don't really understand anything, but I try to read and learn more about quantum and all
you
that.
Do
you
understand.
Quantum is that, you know, as you know, in the atoms, most of what conforms an atom is air, is nothingness. Nothing. Mm-hmm. I mean, they say that if we will get whatever, you know, all the atoms on Earth, the people and everything, if we took all the air, everything, we could be able to condense everything in like in an apple. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, I think that space, you know, and which I associate also with silence, is precious.
Yeah.
Because also frames existence. Mm. That silence and that space is what actually puts the frame to what exists. One of the things that I do in my, you know, limited ways of that I express myself is I have a technique that I, when I play the ronroco, that actually involves the use of many notes played very fast at the same time, you know. Uh-huh. But they are played in such a way, in such a form, that actually after a while it becomes like silence. So
because of the repetition?
Because of the repetition and because it has this sort of hypnotic feel to it, that actually it becomes like silent. So it's funny, but it can be done.
Around what point did that become clear to you? Because as you're talking, I think about the first film score that I really heard was Amores Perros.
Okay.
And it's very clear in the theme of that movie. There's so much silence in between the notes.
Correct.
In Amores Perros.
At the time, I mean, I always did it, as I said, very intuitive, you know, intuitive. But when I did Brokeback Mountain, we were presenting Motorcycle Diaries at Sundance, and somebody at the party after the screening said, you know, Gustavo should meet Ang Lee because he's doing, you know, this movie.
Brokeback
Mountain. So they sent me a script. I read the script, and I love it. So I went back to Los Angeles, and I started working on it and stuff. And like 20 days later, you know, I sent what it became the music of the movie, you know?
Wow.
Because I did all the music before the movie was shot.
Yeah.
Brokeback Mountain.
That's one of the things that amazes me every time I think of that. So, you didn't see the images at all.
Nothing. And so I sent the thing, and I got this phone call that was amazing, and this kind of the end of the story, from the producer, James Seamus. He calls me and laughing, I said, man, you won't believe it. He said, Ang got the music that you sent, and he came and said, he thought it was music that you have done before, you know, that you send it as an example and stuff. And he said, damn, this music would be perfect for the movie. And I said, no, no, this is the music of the movie. You know? And he saw it, James saw it, you know, he told me, he said, I'll see you at the Oscars. He said, you know, I'll see you
at the
Oscars. He said, you know? Yeah, and that's another story. So that's a great, great story too.
I hope you're enjoying my live conversation with Gustavo on Wings of Desire. If you haven't seen it, we'd love to give you the gift of watching it. Be the first person to email us at tmcm@onbeing.org about the movie, and we'll be happy to send you our own Blu-ray copy. That's right, only Blu-ray, sorry DVD friends. Once again, that's tmcm@onbeing.org, and thanks for helping us expand our movie-loving empire. So before, when you were backstage taking notes still,
yes,
I read some lines from Roger Ebert's original review of Wings of Desire.
Uh-huh.
And I just want to read some little bit more because it really reminded me of you and your work. He said, "For me, Wings of Desire is like music or a landscape. It clears a space in my mind, and in that space, I can consider questions. Some of them are asked in the film. Why am I me and why not you? Why am I here and why not there?
Exactly.
When did time begin and where does space end?
When space ends, exactly.
What are the questions that Wings of Desire made you ask, and what are the lines or moments that you always think of? I know you're prepared.
Well, no, because they're all there. Why I'm here and not there? Why am I me and why not you? When did time begin and where the space end? Isn't life under the sun just a dream? Is everything an illusion of a world in front of a world?
Mm.
Does evil exist? You know, connecting to...
Yeah.
And people also that are really evil, are the people that are really evil, you know? Mm. How can it be that this me that I am wasn't me before I existed? You know? And and that someday this me that I am will no longer be me.
Hmm.
You know?
Yeah. That's when you can just think about it every stage of your life.
Yes. But, for example, there's things that are said in the movie, like, for example, once it says, time heals all.
Yeah.
And that's something that my father used to tell me, you know, time is the great, he said, equalizer.
Yeah,
he
the
used
great
to say,
equalizer.
You know, equalizes, you know, time. And which I've didn't have at the time, didn't have the space yet to understand it, really, you know.
Mm.
But, of course, I certainly understand it profoundly now, you know. I like also when he asks himself, you know, should I give up, you know, I mean, and one of the things that also that I loved is this moment in which said, if we lose the storytellers, we lose the inspiration for our childhood. And this connects me also with the thing that I was telling about childhood and innocence, and which takes me also to the music. One of the things that I love is to play instruments that I don't know how to play. First of all, there is the fascination of something totally new and unknown.
Yeah.
You know, the curiosity, which is something so important for me in life, to be curious, you know? So the fact that not knowing an instrument will make me do very minimalistic things, right? Because I won't be able to do something, you know, like an eximio player, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So then the other factor which I love is precisely the innocence that you have in front of something like that, you know? And the element of danger, which I also love, I think is so important, that is so present also in childhood.
Mm-hmm.
That sense, you know, of...
Yeah.
Danger.
It's uncomfortable.
And, you know? Yeah.
And as adults, we kind of avoid it.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So, and I think that ends up producing something or can bring something out artistically that could be very grabbing, you know?
Mm.
Very, I mean, you really have to use your heart.
Yeah.
You can't use your brain.
Mm.
You know, I mean, you just, you know, you can't.
No.
And so I use that still today, you know, I do grab instruments and I try to use it here and there in scores or anything that I do.
Approaching it like a child.
Yes.
Was machst du denn da?
Ich sitze.
Bist du traurig?
Nein.
Bist du krank?
Ja.
Was hast du denn?
Mangel.
Ach so.
Ein doppelter Knoten ist das Einzige, was hält.
I love that you keep going back to being a child, because something else that comes up in Wings of Desire is the children know the angels are there.
Absolutely.
They're the only ones who can see the angels.
Absolutely.
And it's fascinating. I think it's because they're the only ones who have that kind of pure heart to see the angels, right?
Absolutely. Yes.
Yeah. So we have to wrap up here, but I do want to ask you one last question, which is... you know, one of my favorite things about movies, and it's why I love watching movies over and over again at different stages of my life, it's because they change for you every time you see them at a different stage in your life, right? It was different when you saw it in 1987, it'll be different in 1995, and every time you watch. And I just wonder how Wings of Desire has changed for you as you've continued to go on your journey together?
It's a great question. I will say that basically the same way that, as I mentioned before, that there are things that I was able to articulate after I did it, you know, that it took me a while to be able to now talk about silence and the use of silence and all that. I was doing it for a long time without really...
Yeah, unconsciously you were doing
knowing
it.
How to express it, right?
Yeah.
In a way, I articulated inside of me everything that is said in the movie in a much more, I don't know if it's profound, but more clear.
Clearly.
It's more clear, yeah. even more in focus than I had when I saw it for the first time.
It's like you had, tenías la semilla, you had the seed inside of you, but you were able to then express it.
Yes, yes.
Gustavo Santaolalla is an Argentinian musician and film composer behind the music for over a dozen movies, including Amores Perros, The Motorcycle Diaries, The Book of Life, and he also won Oscars for Brokeback Mountain and Babel. Before Gustavo's film scoring days, I discovered him through the amazing Mexican rock band, Café Tacuba, one of my favorite bands and Latin America's Radiohead in many ways, which he produced and really helped co-found. Also, a special shout out to the Criterion Collection for gifting 75 copies of Wings of Desire to the audience who was present during my conversation with Gustavo. Criterion is the gold standard for curating the defining moments in cinema. I personally have Wes Anderson's Royal Tenenbaums and Kevin Smith's Chasing Amy from their collection, and they're amazing, just jam-packed with commentaries and special features and everything that a movie fan loves and needs. On the next This Movie Changed Me, we're going to be talking with Brightwall Darkroom senior editor Lauren Wilford. The movie that changed her is Kill Bill Volume 2, and I can't wait to share with you how Uma Thurman's character, the bride, helped Lauren live with anxiety and make sense of her evangelical Christian background. This Movie Changed Me is produced by Maya Terrell, Chris Hegel, Tony Lee Yu, and Kristen Lin, and is an On Being Studios production. Subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your podcasts. If you have a spare moment, leave us a review because people actually do read them. I'm Lily Percy. Do yourself a favor and spend some time with Gustavo Santaolalla's music and film scores. They're cinematic escapes.